Welcome to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements of Drab to Fab Landscaping. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas to help solve problems and keep you up to date on the latest development in the nursery and landscape industry. For a podcast of today's program and others, visit walteranderson.com and click on the podcast tab. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements, and we will be here for the next hour talking to you about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. If you have a question for us, would like to comment on the show, or have a suggestion for a topic or a guest you would like to hear about, you can email us at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com or follow us on the Walter Anderson Nursery main Facebook page. Morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I am doing well.
Good.
I am doing well. We have classes coming up today?
We do. Today being the 12th of April. 12th of April. And interestingly, John, you're teaching today here in Poway.
I'm teaching.
Yeah, I hope you're ready for this.
I'm so ready. And I've been pumping it everywhere and a lot of response. So that's always a very well attended class. And frankly, there's a big need for people to have help with their citrus.
I was going to say, we didn't say what the name of the class
was. Oh,
yes. Yeah. So you're teaching citrus about
citrus.
Care, culture, and varieties, right?
That's right.
And,
yeah,
and
I too have been
promoting it. It's usually a very well-attended class.
Yeah, it's popular. And you know why? Because everybody's citrus looked terrible.
Hey, wait a minute. Oh, hang on. I resemble
that. Yours look great.
Mine look pretty good.
No, we had dinner and man, yours looks super.
We have one that doesn't look good. My Santa Teresa lemon. We're working on that.
Yeah, I need to work on mine. Mine do okay. All of them are, they're all in containers because you can't, it's very difficult to grow citrus in the ground at Scripps Ranch. Stadium Cobble, is that what it's called? But they're all way too big for the containers, and I need to repot them. And when I repot them, I have this one little plot in the yard. It's all plumbed for irrigation because that was where we were originally going to be planting vegetable gardens. But the soil just didn't work out. So I'm going to put them all into bigger containers and I'm going to put them all on their own irrigation system so that they get watered consistently, not like they do in containers like I have now on the patio. And hopefully they'll do better.
You know how many times a week I have people ask me, well, what's the best fruit tree for containers? And I say, none of them. They really, none of them. Do not put them in containers. I just think, and I say, is there a compelling, now, can you have a compelling reason? Because you don't have soil.
Oh, I've killed a number of citrus trying to grow them.
So I can understand that. But if there's an option to put them in the ground, put them in the ground.
Yeah.
And if you are going to grow them in pots, put them in the biggest pot you can get. And then you need to really take it out of that pot about every other year, shave all the soil away from the roots and repot it in fresh soil because they just run out of steam.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, they do.
I would argue, which I don't normally argue with you, but blueberries, when you say there are no fruit, now granted, it's not a tree, but those tend to do much better here.
In barrels. Absolutely. Yes. I would. There's the exception to the rule. Yeah. You know, I had a client, really one of the sweetest houses I ever installed and worked on out toward Southwestern Yacht Club, right on the bay with their own dock. You'd be so envious. I mean, those are grandfathered in.
Yeah.
And they took two houses, scraped them, left one wall, and then built a literal limestone Italian villa there. And so they thought, well, if you're going to have this multi-jillion-dollar place on the bay that's made of limestone that looks like Italy, then you really need 200-year-old citrus pots from Tuscany. And they literally did. I don't know how much they paid for
this.
$10,000 a piece or something with full-size orange trees in them. And so I'm going to follow my own teaching. Every 2 years or so, you have to pull those out, take all the dirt off, repack, do everything. Well, we had to rent a crane to do them. And I used to just cringe because I think I'm going to break a $10,000 pot that's 200 years old for these stupid citrus. Anyway, so, yeah.
Well, the the French aristocracy used to grow citrus in containers, and they would move at Versailles.
Yeah,
they would move them into the greenhouse in the winter.
In the orangerie.
Yeah, and then they would move them out in the summertime.
And George Washington did at Mount Vernon as well, mm-hmm. in the big greenhouse that was butted up against the house.
Yeah, well,
they had fire underneath it. Yeah,
they have that much money to do all that.
Well, it's kind of interesting that the citrus production in the United States is actually slowly moving north out of Florida. And they're moving the Georgia citrus industry is actually starting to grow. And the main thing that they've been growing, from what I've been following in the trade publications, the main thing that they've been growing in Georgia is mandarins.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're more cold hardy.
They're much more cold tolerant. Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting how things are progressing over there.
But with regard to that class, again, that's on the 12th at 9:30 in Poway at Citrus. And unfortunately, we don't have a class identified for the San Diego store, and we will publish it as soon as we hear.
Yeah, so check the Facebook page. That's where you can get the most up-to-date information as to what's going on in both of the stores.
Right, or the under classes on our regular website homepage.
On our website at walteranderson.com, and that's S-E-N, not S-O-N.
And the last class I taught, a couple of very nice ladies took me to lunch after the class. They said, could we take you to lunch? And so we went to Smoke and Jay's Barbecue down here, and they were able to ask. I said, you can ask any question you want for the entirety of lunch. So if anybody wants to have a private consult after the citrus class, I am open to go to Smoke and Jay's for barbecue.
That's the one over by old Poway Park.
It is.
I haven't eaten there yet.
And yet the best part for me and others is it almost everything's gluten-free.
Oh, well, there you go.
Okay.
Yeah, you're not going to die.
I'm not going to die there.
Yeah. Is the wine tasting room still there? It was next door?
It wasn't quite next door, but just up Mission Cellars.
Mission Cellars. Yeah,
as far as I know, it's still there.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't been there in a long, long time. So I don't even know how I stumbled across it. In one of my evening jaunts through YouTube, I came across a video on 15 heirloom vegetables you need to grow. And I watched it I'll find the link for it, and we'll put it on the Facebook page. So
I have it. I'll put it on.
Yeah.
It's a great.
So definitely take a look at it. Really, really interesting. And so I went through it and wrote down the list and then came into work and tried and tracked down what we have of the ones. And I think we had five of the 15 in stock. And then I went to our seed suppliers to look to see if they had them in stock, and they didn't. But I did manage, we have sourced them all out, and all when we make the post on the Facebook page, I'll list the websites. And I actually, this week I actually went through and I ordered seeds for all of the 15, and I'm going to share them with you guys when they come in, so we can try them out and see what we think.
But that would be fun.
What's interesting is that the actual title, I don't know if you remember, it was the 15 American vegetables that have vanished.
That's right.
Over time.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So a lot of stuff that I had never even heard of before. We'll get into that list right now. The first one off the top was tennis ball lettuce, which is it's not really a head lettuce, right, Georgia?
It's a butter head. It's much smaller.
Yeah, right? Much smaller.
I don't like the fuzz on the outside of that one.
Oh. Yeah, the rubbery texture
in the middle.
Right.
But that was one that Thomas Jefferson planted at Monticello. Goodness.
And he noted that it was it doesn't require so much care and attention. That's why he liked it.
Well, and didn't you told me that when you went to Monticello, they told you on the tour that he ordered that so many.
Oh, interesting. Yes. You do remember that.
Lettuce was planted.
So he liked lettuce so much. And this was actually not from the tour, but I guess re-educated myself. It was one of the classes I did on fruit and vegetable lore and actually I wrote it down this morning. So he loved lettuce, and he didn't, you know, he wanted it available. So he ordered his gardeners that a thimble full of lettuce seed should be planted every Monday from 1 February through 1 September. And so there was constant supply of, much like Farmer Roy when he gets his lettuce here, you know, very similar.
And a thimble full of lettuce seed.
That's a lot of lettuce.
That's a lot of lettuce.
Now, you could be a lazy gardener like myself. And John, you mentioned, you know, you were at our house last week. I have a lot of lettuce growing in the garden.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, but it's all volunteer. It's all from seed that got blown. And we have lettuce everywhere. And we're eating lettuce out of the garden that we didn't plant.
Yeah, just grows.
It's nice being, like sometimes being a lazy gardener has its benefits.
One of the other ones that was on the list was another one that I had never heard of before. I'm kind of surprised you hadn't heard of it, George, but Long Island cheese pumpkin.
You know, I was...
Oh, I've raised those. Pumpkin. Yeah. They're fantastic.
We've raised a lot of other pumpkin and squash. I don't remember growing that.
Well, the interesting thing is the Long Island cheese pumpkin, they call it cheese pumpkin because it looks like a wheel of cheese. It's a lower, squattier pumpkin.
I think I got the seeds for that one from Johnny's Selected Seeds. And we grew them at the Botanic Garden. They were really a great variety.
Yeah, what was interesting in that video piece was that it's equally good as a pumpkin pie source because it's sweet enough, but it also makes good soups as well as just squash to eat as squash.
Yeah, a very interesting variety. One of the other ones on the list was Jimmy Nardello's sweet peppers, and in the video, I've never tried. I had never heard of them. That happens to be one that we have in stock, as far as seed is concerned. But it said it's one of the best frying peppers that's out there. Really sweet, really good.
It had a fruity flavor, according to it. And they said that it comes from Italy, and it was a family that brought it over. Jimmy Nardello's mother.
Is he in the mob?
Probably
in the mob.
And brought it over. It was very productive, and they grew it forever. And then it slowly got out to be sold as seeds.
Have that with gabagool. Yeah.
Leave the gun, grab the cannoli.
One of the other, another one that was on the list was glass gem corn, which when I was a kid, we used to call it Indian corn. And for whatever reason, I have no idea why now, but we were always under the impression that Indian corn was toxic. So you couldn't eat it, but you can, at least the glass gem corn, but it's not a sweet corn like you would normally use for barbecue or cooking and eating, but you can use it for cornmeal. It makes really good cornmeal. It's actually a beautiful,
it's gorgeous,
beautiful plant. Pretty.
And it can be popped as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's another one that's a really interesting one. And that happens to be another one that we have in stock from seed.
Nice.
Another one that I first saw several years ago when heirloom tomatoes started becoming more popular was the mortgage lifter tomato.
Oh yeah. I like that one. Yeah. It's a good one.
I have, you know, I have not grown that one myself. I need to give it a try. But the story behind it is true. The guy that hybridized it basically paid off his mortgage with the production of it because it produces huge tomatoes. Very good quality fruit, and just a very interesting variety. We're going to be talking more about these heirlooms that have disappeared when we come back. We're going to take a quick break. We're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements. We'll be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements. If you have a question or suggestion or want to find out about something about the show, feel free to drop us an email at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com, or you can also find us on the Walter Anderson Nursery main Facebook page. And we would be happy to, we'd love to hear from you, and we'd be happy to talk about anything that you are interested in. We were talking about mortgage lifter tomatoes before we broke for the for the commercial break. And you, George, you said you've grown
I have grown them before. I didn't get, you know, some of the seed catalogs say that they can get up to 2 pounds. I've never gotten one quite
that large.
That's
a big tomato.
But they have been bigger, but they are like a lot of heirlooms. They tend to not look as pretty as some of the more hybridized varieties. So if you have OCD or a neat freak, they might not be the tomato for you, but flavor wise, they are delicious.
Yeah, it is a good one.
They're very meaty, full of flavor.
Another one that was listed that Thomas Jefferson also grew was bullnose pepper, which is basically a variety of sweet bell pepper. And we have sourced that one out as well. Bell peppers are they're pretty easy to grow. I mean, it's not a tough one. I did see an interesting article a couple of weeks ago. They said that if you're growing peppers, when they start to grow, as soon as the first flower comes out, you take off all of the growth below that flower, and it pushes the growth above that flower, and you actually get better production out of them. I'd never heard that before.
I hadn't either.
So I thought that was an interesting theory.
I hadn't heard that either. Maybe when we, the next time we are in contact with Farmer Roy, because he grows big bell peppers for the facility there, see what he thinks of that. Yeah.
And, you know, and if you prefer red bell peppers, you can pretty much buy green bell peppers and
just leave them on the
plant
and
until they turn red. That's an easy way to go. Another interesting one that was on the list was Boston Marrow Squash, which I had never heard of until I saw the video. They're huge, just enormous squash that this produces. They have great staying power. So once they're harvested, you can keep them for a long period of time. And quite frankly, the squash are so big, it looks like you could probably get about 3 or 4 meals out of one squash.
10 to 20 pounds from some of the seed catalogs is what they anticipate.
That's a big squash.
That's a big squash. It's from the mid 1800s.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was another really interesting one. Another one that I had not heard of and is Amish deer tongue lettuce. And I had never heard of deer tongue lettuce. We actually have some deer tongue lettuce in stock at the store. But it's a red deer tongue. But Amish deer tongue is green. But it's a leaf lettuce.
It's delicious. That's one of my favorite lettuces.
Really?
The deer tongues. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really great.
Yeah. So that's another one that I think I'm going to have to try growing.
Is it lettuces or lettuce eye?
Lettuce.
You know, what was interesting on that one was that it seemed to need a lot less care. It was more drought tolerant and can take the heat more than some of the other lettuce.
That's true.
Tends to not bolt.
So that's a nice, exactly. Yeah, so that's a nice advantage here for your summer garden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And moving on, there was red fig tomato, which basically is a pear tomato, but it's red. Most oftentimes when you see pear tomatoes, they're going to be the yellow pear tomatoes. But the red fig tomato is basically a red pear tomato. Now with the yellow pear tomatoes, those things produce like crazy.
The
amount of fruit that they produce is insane. And I think the red fig is the same way. It produces a tremendous amount of fruit. So relatively easy to grow. As far as tomatoes are concerned, you just put them in the ground and let them go.
And that video mentioned that they were useful for a variety of things. You know, some tomatoes are better for paste. Right. Some are better to, you know, throw in a salad. This could be used in many different recipes.
Yeah, I think in the video they mentioned using it for sauce.
Right.
Well, Sun Gold is one I love too. It's a, you know, a little cherry, but it's so productive. I could go out every day and get a gallon of Sun Gold tomatoes, and I know it's not really a sauce tomato, but I would make sauce out of that, put it through a food mill, freaks people out because they're not expecting sort of this butterscotch colored tomato sauce, and put that on ravioli or something. Oh my goodness, it's so delicious.
You know, for the most part, cherry tomatoes probably produce far more pound for pound than any of the other tomatoes. The amount of fruit that they produce is incredible. And a lot of times they will reseed themselves and and come back year yep. after year. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't, it's, you buy it once, you have it forever. but that's another one that I think I'm going to try this. Another one is white egg turnip, which is a small white turnip. Unlike beets, that's a root crop that I happen to like. So
we just had some last week. We had turnips with our dinner.
Yeah, turnips are good.
And I like them.
Yeah. And the white egg turnip, it's a little bit smaller.
It's supposed to be milder and a little sweeter.
Yeah,
relatively speaking.
That's a really good one.
Well, let me ask you this then: do you like turnip greens?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just checking.
I'll eat turnip greens. I'll actually even. Beet greens too. I think
we eat that as well.
Yeah,
turnips and carrots together. Are
oh,
quite
that's
good.
Great. Roasted,
just roasted. Yes. Oh my.
Okay,
goodness.
I'm getting hungry here.
When we were back in February, we went back to New Orleans for a trade show, and the last night that we were in New Orleans, Melanie and I went out to dinner at it's actually a pretty famous restaurant on Bourbon Street called Galatory's, and it's interesting. If you travel outside of California, you really get a feeling for how expensive California is. Mm. We went out to dinner at this restaurant, and it's a really nice restaurant. I had steak, Melanie had salmon. We had cocktails, we had dessert, and with a tip, it was $157.
Wow.
And out here, that would have been, that was easily a $300 or $400 meal. It was insane how cheap it was. But what really caught my attention when I ordered the steak was it came with a side dish, and there were a few different ones that you could get, but one of the ones that I chose was Clemenceau, which I had never heard of before.
Sounds like
it's
me.
Clemenceau. It was roasted potatoes, peas, roasted potatoes, peas, and mushrooms.
Ooh.
And they would, and it came out, it came as a side dish. It was fantastic.
Oh,
it was,
my goodness.
It was, I've never seen it before anywhere. And I'm a huge steakhouse fan. I love going out for a good steak, but that was the first time I'd ever seen it. It was fantastic.
Mm. I thought you were going to bring turnips into that you were down there and they had turnips.
A little bit of a deviation there, but yeah, that was really good. I would, if you ever go to a steakhouse and they have, a side of steak Clemenceau.
Hmm. How did they spell that? You recall?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not off the top of my head.
I'll have to look it up.
Probably just like the Pink Panther. You'd have to.
Yeah.
Definitely look that one up. Another one of the ones that was on the list was Georgia Rattlesnake Watermelon. And it got its name because the markings on it look kind of like a rattlesnake, but it produces huge watermelons. Like I think, was it 20 to 40 pounds?
24 to 45
pounds.
Wow.
Huge watermelons. Wow. They said it has an absolutely fantastic flavor. Unfortunately, because it is an heirloom, it also has a lot of seeds in it.
Mm.
But man, I remember. Well, we didn't have seedless watermelon when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. All the watermelon that we had seeds in it.
So but you
I
could just, shoot them at your brothers. That's why you have cousins.
Yeah, you squeeze them between your fingers. Yeah. But I remember the flavor of the watermelon back when it was just amazing.
We've grown some really good size. We had a 40 pounder last year. I brought some into the nursery for.
Oh yeah, you did.
I just grow them under all those fruit trees because I have irrigation. I throw in, get them going, and we've had great success like that. I'd like to try this one, although it looks big. The nice thing about this particular variety is that it has very firm skin, so it ships well and it holds up well.
Yeah, it holds well.
Which, you know, is not a big deal for if you're growing it in your backyard.
Does it say how it does with mildew?
It doesn't. No, because that is a problem on watermelon.
Yeah.
Not on the watermelon, but on the leaves.
Yes. Moving on, another one was Boston pickling cucumber, which is one of the smaller cucumbers that lends itself very well pickling. And cucumbers are actually a fairly easy crop to grow. Mm-hmm. It happens to be one of the vegetables that I really like. Fresh cucumbers are outstanding. You can snack on them.
Mm-hmm.
Melanie puts them in salads all the time.
I love Persian cucumbers.
Persian, yeah.
I'm not crazy about the English, but boy, the Persians are good.
Yeah, they are really, really tasty.
They get beat up by the sun here, though. Do you shade them or put them in an area?
Grow them under shade cloth.
Yeah, they get beat up.
Yeah,
at least here in Poway.
Yeah, that's one I haven't. I'm a big fan of them, but I haven't grown them myself. But that's good to know if I do try to grow them, to put them, give them some shade. Give them some shade.
Easy for you.
Yes. Yes. Indeed.
And that's another one. We've been talking about all these. Almost all of them come from the 1800s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, these all really, really old plants that you just don't see around very much. One that we do have every season and is super easy to grow and produces like crazy is Tomatillo Verde. And tomatillo's interesting plant. The fruit forms with a very thin husk over the outside of it, but excellent for green salsa. Outstanding.
Great
outstanding
to cook plant. With.
Yeah. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We were talking about Tomatillo Verde during the break, which actually extended into a longer conversation about a lot of other things. You had mentioned a place, Super Cocina.
Super Cocina, it's on University. I think the cross street would be Cherokee.
Okay.
And if you're really into, I mean, this is like food that Abuela used to make. This is not burritos, no tacos. This is deep Southern Mexico cooking and lots of sauces. And one of my favorite things there is a sauce that they make called pepillon, and it's made with pumpkin seeds. And it is insanely good. My eyes just roll back in my head when I eat that. And but if you like things like this, beautiful tomatillo salsas and chile verde and chile colorado, all that, this is a good place to go eat.
I am going to put that on my list. There's another place down there that Melanie and I we still go to every once in a while. It's a huge supermarket called Pancho Villa's, and it's near University and 805.
It's El Cajon Boulevard.
Is it El Cajon? Yeah. El Cajon Boulevard and 805. Mm-hmm. Incredible place. We'd go down there and just stock up on our necessities that we have. But as we're leaving, we would go by the fresh food counter and we'd pick up a pound of chicharrones. And oh, their chicharrones are just absolutely outstanding, and we would just mow on those all the way back up to Scripps Ranch. Just
what a guilty pleasure that is.
it really is. And it was about 20 years ago, Melanie was reading an article in the Union Tribune about a tortilleria down in Barrio Logan, and it was called El Porvenir, and I think the business was started in 1917. And is you take 5 south and you take the Crosby Street, or and I think it's now Cesar Chavez exit, down to National Avenue and turn right on National. It was like 3 doors down. And other than the flour tortillas and the corn tortillas that they made, they had a menu where you could get food to go. And they had carnitas, tamales, and chili rellenos. And you could get a chili relleno burrito or a carnitas burrito. And it was the best carnitas I've ever had in my life. Just very caramelized, very crispy, just outstanding. And we would go down there about once. We'd drive down from Scripps Ranch about once a month just to go to lunch there, because the food was absolutely incredible. It was really, really good. Sadly, they are no longer in business, unfortunately.
You know, I'm somewhat feeling like I should channel my inner Eleanor Widmer. Anybody remember Eleanor? She was a friend of mine. Yeah. You know, hello, my darlings. We're talking food here. Yeah. But, you know, but isn't that interesting how if you're a hardcore gardener, we are plant geeks of plant geeks, and you start talking about the crops you raise and the food and then tomatillos or teca chilies, and what happens? We immediately go to food.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's part of
which
the essence.
Which is why
of,
you grow a lot of that,
which is why
right?
we're growing that right. stuff, right? Yeah. We like to raise that stuff because we like to eat.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing with carnitas, I love them when they're crispy and caramelized, and you don't find that very often in San Diego.
So have you been to Carnitas Uruapan in Tijuana?
No.
Okay. My housekeeper and my kids were small. She would always bring me a big, it's called the chuleta. It's like a bone-in pork chop. That's the way they do it traditionally in Mexico. And at Carnitas Uruapan, they have a big copper kettle with lard in it.
Oh.
And they deep fry this chuleta in there. And then that's the carnita. And it gets caramelized and delicious and succulent and just unbelievable. And I think it's the same lard that's been in that pot for 100 years. They never change it. They just keep adding just to it adding every day. It.
Yeah, that sounds about right. There, two of the places that I know of in San Diego where you can still get carnitas that way, Old Town Mexican.
Oh yeah,
you can order them caramelized, and then there's a new place that opened here in Poway, just at the bottom of the hill. It's one of Melanie and mine's favorite places now, called Tacos and Tequila, and they serve carnitas Michoacan style, which is the caramelized and crispy, and it's so good. It's absolutely outstanding. Chris and his team do a wonderful job. So if you're ever in Poway and you're looking for Mexican food, Tacos and Tequila is great. You know who else does really good carnitas, although they're typically not crispy, is Hernandez Hideaway.
Yes. Are they still there?
Yeah, I believe so. Okay. It's been a while since I've been there, but you talk about Hideaway.
It's
in the middle of nowhere. But a really, really fun place, really neat place to go, is a hidden gem of San Diego.
So speaking of heirloom veggies that we all like, what, George and Ken, what would your favorites be of sort of what would be considered heirloom or very hard to get things that you grow in your own garden?
Because we were talking tomatillos, I just wanted to add, you need two of them to really get fruit, to right. pollinate.
Yep.
They can be the same plant, but you need two. You can't just throw a tomatillo in.
Yeah.
A lot of the heirloom tomatoes I particularly like. I'm a big fan of Cherokee Purple.
That is a good one.
I like Brandywine, although they don't do as well here, I think. I think we need a little bit more moisture and maybe a little bit less harsh sun. When Mike Atkinson was here talking about his plumerias, he mentioned the humidity helps buffer some of the sun. We don't have that, so our plants get beaten up pretty badly. Anyway, I do like a lot of the heirloom tomatoes. What about yourself?
You know, our dear friend, we all love Brigitte. Hello, Brigitte Pena. We love you. Brigitte has a melon called Kajari melon.
She gave me seeds years ago and I grew that.
Oh, yeah, I did too. And, you know, the thing that I recall, the first time that Brigitte gave me a Kajari melon, I had it on the counter in the kitchen and the whole house smelled like this very sweet, slightly spicy. This melon is unbelievable. They're tiny. They're maybe size of a grapefruit, but extremely sweet, sort of green interior, beautiful on the outside. And the thing I liked about it the most was it didn't get a spot of mildew on it. It was probably the easiest small melon. Yes,
yeah,
probably the easiest small melon to grow I've ever seen. And I like Lakota squash. That's a botanical interests sourced beautiful squash, two-tone, dark green and bright orange. And it is actually an heirloom from the Lakota Sioux, and delicious, beautiful squash. But the tendrils will go 30 feet in all directions.
Oh, wow.
I've never seen one grow so vigorously as that. But boy, that's a good one.
Yeah, I just don't have the.
You don't have room.
I don't have room for that, unfortunately.
Yeah, George, you have a lot of room. We're going to just grow everything at your
place. We can do that. You come on over.
Yeah, I grew everything. I grow has to be in. Basically has to be in containers because of the soil and two because of the space. But I've tried growing heirloom tomatoes, and for the extra work that you have to put into them to make them work, I'd rather put in, for me, I would rather put in one of the more modern hybrids, and it's easier to grow and more production out of them. So it, usually, typically it's early girl.
Yeah, that's a great tomato. That's all round. It's one of the best. I do really like the dark brown sort of chocolate colored tomatoes that came out of Russia right after Glasnost. Black Krim.
Another good one. Yeah.
What a great tomato. Or Black from Tula. Those are, or Black Prince is another one. They're, those are delicious tomatoes. Very big. They seem to be very productive, at least early on in the season. They're really great. Thessaloniki was one of my favorites of all time. A pink tomato. Really productive. Very good. And Pink Caspian is another one. I think those are both Greek tomatoes. In fact, I was in Thessaloniki during Kosovo. Anyway, it's just across the border. But those are great tomatoes.
Yeah. You know, Donovan Steakhouse, which was probably my favorite restaurant of all time when it was over in UTC, they used to do beefsteak, tomato, and red onion salad, where it was just slices. It was slices of beefsteak, tomato, and slices of red onion with balsamic vinegar on it. And you could order it with blue cheese crumbles on top of it. It was so good. It was one of the best pre-entree items you could ever order. It was absolutely fantastic.
Wow.
But see, with the big tomatoes, like because I've tried growing beefsteak at my house, and I think it's just too hot out here in Scripture to really do well. They catface terribly. They get the really big convoluted fruit, and the fruit tastes great, but it's terribly unattractive, and it doesn't present itself well.
I think a lot of people do shade cloth out here. I know Farmer Roy puts it on. I think he says in July. I could be wrong, but he covers all the tomatoes with black shade cloth.
That doesn't surprise me. I think that. Oh, maybe that's what maybe I need to move them into a shadier part of the yard.
You know, for sheer productivity too. I had a dwarf mulberry. I think that Dave Wilson and Walter Anderson Nursery, I should get a cut of all of the spicy nectar plums that I sell, because I'm always just really extolling the virtues of the spicy nectar plum. But the other plant that I think every house should have, because you can keep it fairly small, is dwarf mulberry. I had one maybe 15 feet high. So when they say dwarf, they don't mean 3 feet high. They mean 15 feet instead of 60 feet.
Yeah.
So a dwarf mulberry, but they're so productive. I used to have friends come over with 5 gallon buckets. They said, can we just pick? Go ahead. Yeah. And you could get a couple of 5 gallon buckets a day during peak season. And I just say, give me a cut. You know, I mean, I want, are you making ice cream with that? Scones, just bring some back, you know? And, I think everybody should have one of those in their garden if they have room.
Yeah. Mulberry is actually, that's a really good fruit.
It's easy too. We have three different, we have the weeping.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
you didn't see that because it was up in the corner, but we have the weeping
teas mulberry.
And we have a white, and then I have the regular.
I've never tasted the white.
I think the white is incredibly sweet. It's a delicious piece of fruit.
And you know, for the standard mulberry trees, if you need a shade tree, they get huge.
They're huge.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, at Bates Nut Farm, right in front of the store, there's a grove of trees. And I believe those are all Pakistani mulberries. They're enormous, enormous trees. And they grow pretty quickly too.
Yeah, they do. Don't track the dark stains onto your white carpet at the house though.
Hopefully.
I've got a story about that when we come back. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. I mentioned before we went into the break about a mulberry story that I had, and a long time ago, way before the Poway store opened, we had had a guy that worked for us who was, I think the best way to describe him was a fruitivore. He didn't eat anything except fruit, and one day I was working down at the nursery in San Diego, and he came walking in the back door, and he looked like he had just committed a murder. His hands were just completely, it looked like blood. I panicked and I ran over and like, what happened? What happened? He said, oh, that big mulberry tree out in the back had a bunch of fruit on it. So I picked a bunch and I squeezed it for the juice. Well, his hands were purple for like the next week.
Wow.
But it can stain. Mulberries sure can stain.
Absolutely.
So be very wary of that if you're going to plant a mulberry tree. Oh, the other thing that mulberries, it's the host for silkworms.
It is right. For silkworms.
And there, I might have been on Ken Kramer's show. I can't remember where I saw it, but there was a huge silk
in
factory
North
in
County,
Vista,
San Diego,
up in Vista. Yeah,
there sure was.
Yeah, so. Yeah, and I think a lot of schools grow silkworms as part of a science project, because I know we get hit up every once in a while for mulberry leaves to feed the silkworms, which is what they feed on.
Yeah, my old house in PQ was near a school, and people would stop and knock on our front door. Excuse me, but we're raising silkworms. Is it possible to take some of the leaves off this tree? We have a big one in the front yard. Yeah, please
help yourself.
You know, don't go starting your silkworm farm without having a source of food. I'm sorry. This is just very unintentional.
I think we actually donated a mulberry tree to Dingman Elementary School in Scripps Ranch so that they had a source for mulberry leaves when they were doing their silkworm experiments.
My goodness.
Yeah. Got a couple others on the list here for the heirlooms that disappeared. Purple potted pole bean. And I've never had purple beans myself.
Oh, I've grown them. Not this particular one, but purple. I grow them regularly.
And the interesting thing that I saw in the video about it was they said that when you cook them, they turn green. They lose the purple color.
They lose the purple.
Which is strange to me, but...
Well, and some things, it's like I grew blue potatoes one year. Mm-hmm. I thought how fun it would be to raise blue potatoes. Well, you know, when you cook them, they turn gray. And they were the most unappetizing looking things I ever saw in my life. And so I made potato salad and nobody would eat it. It was really ugly.
This went bad.
Yeah.
That's what they were thinking. You know. That bean you just mentioned, the purple potted pole bean.
Mm-hmm.
It's an heirloom, but it's from the 1930s. It's not quite as old
as
the other things we were looking at.
Yeah. Talking about blue potatoes. Brigantine used to make a potato salad. Was unbelievably good. Outstanding. Wow. I don't know if it's still on the menu or not, but if you're ever at one of the Brigantine restaurants and they have the blue potato and bacon salad on the menu, I would highly recommend it. The other one, the last one that was on the list, and one that I am familiar with and that we actually have the seed for here in the store, strawberry popcorn. And it's typically grown as an ornamental popcorn. The ears are small. They're only about maybe 3 inches long. Deep burgundy, blood red, a really dark red. And the kernels are really small too. And the reason why I remember that is my grandparents used to grow it, and my grandmother would harvest it when it was ripe and let it dry. And she would use it as table ornamentation for family dinners for Christmas and Thanksgiving and things like that. And as a little kid, I remember my grandfather when we would all be sitting around the table after dinner, he would take one of the ears and he would pull some of the kernels off of it, put them in a spoon, and then he would hold the spoon over a candle and let the kernels pop. And of course they would explode and fly all over the dining room. And my grandmother didn't particularly care for that. But I just remember being fascinated by that, by actually watching that happen. But it's a really neat plant, and it's a really pretty,
beautiful,
really pretty presentation. So
George is showing us a photo
yeah.
on his computer, and it is a really gorgeous.
They are smaller, and they say that they only put 2 to 4 ears per stalk.
Hmm.
Yeah, so not overly productive, but it's a really neat plant. I would if you like growing corn, I would highly recommend throwing that in there. You can put it in there with some of the glass gem or Indian corn,
or the pole beans,
beans,
and some squash. Maybe the what was that big squash? The Boston Marrow squash.
Well, with the
Three Sisters, right?
as the Native Americans used to plant. They would plant squash, beans, and corn all in the same.
That's right. The Three Sisters.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, I think that they would run after that particular squash. You've heard of it, haven't you? The Boston Marathon.
Oh,
that's so bad.
I'll be here all week.
So bad.
Yeah.
Speaking of good varieties, too, I think we're hungry today, guys, because we're talking about all these good things to grow in the garden and to eat. What's your favorite variety of strawberry? For local San Diego.
I don't remember which one they grow up in Carlsbad at the U-Pix. Is it Chandler that they grow up there?
They're mostly Chandlers.
Those are outstanding.
All beyond Chandler and Sequoia.
Yeah.
Sequoia really perform well here.
Yeah. Sequoia is tough to beat.
Yeah.
I mean, it is hard to beat.
They produce very, very well.
They'll keep growing
year after year. That is a good one. And I remember when we used to talk to people about planting strawberries, we would tell them to put plastic down, mm-hmm. black plastic, cut a hole in the plastic after you amend the soil and mm-hmm. get it ready to go, and then plant the strawberries in the hole so that as they spread out, they spread over the plastic and it keeps the earwigs and the sow bugs out of the fruit.
Right.
And it increases the soil temperature, which increases the rate of growth for them.
Oh yeah.
For the plants. But I know in some areas, there was a grower there was a strawberry farm down in Chula Vista. I don't think it's there anymore.
Oh, it's gone.
Is it gone? Yeah. But they would grow the strawberries on mounds between furrows that were really deep, like mm-hmm. 2 feet deep. And part of that was so that you didn't have to bend over so far to harvest the strawberries.
Mm.
You know, quite frankly, well, as I'm getting older, that's the last thing I want to do is go and pick stuff up off the ground. It's just getting too hard to do that. But if you got it 2 feet up in the air, then mm-hmm. you're not leaning over and trying to tie your shoes to pick strawberries. So that if you have the space to do it, that's one way to do it. My dad's uncle, Porky, Corky's Honey Delight.
Yes. Corky's Honey Delight.
Somewhere in our archives, we have an article about it. It actually ran in the newspaper. He took a wine barrel and drilled holes in the side of it and planted strawberries just like a giant wooden strawberry pot.
Hmm.
And I have no idea how much that thing weighed or what they did with it after he planted it, but they were growing strawberries out of the side of a full wooden wine barrel.
Wow. So. You know, one of the things that makes me sad these days, because there's so many things that are different. I miss the demise of magazines. And mm-hmm. I used to be in Sunset Magazine once in a while. And you know, now there's nothing to get published in.
I'm just in the post office.
The only place to see my photo now is at the post office. But I remember in the late 80s, I did a big landscape job for Tom and Janie Olson in Scripps Ranch. And we were published in Sunset Magazine because we did kind of raised beds before people were doing raised beds. And I went to so much work to get Chandler strawberries for them. That was when no homeowners knew about Chandlers. And I got them from, I think it was Ikigawa Brothers. And I paid top dollar and got these things. And then there we were in Sunset Magazine with these. I'm telling you, Chandlers, if they're grown well, that's like your fist. They're huge.
Well,
delicious.
And dating myself again, but going back 30 years, the only strawberries that we really could get was sequoias.
Yep, and Tioga.
That was Tioga.
The only ones we could ever see.
But now there's
Seascape, Yeah. Albion,
Honeyoy, Albion.
Yeah, there's all kinds of all kinds
Fort Laramie. That's a good little strawberry. Yep. Tiny, but good.
Yeah.
So it's the Alpines, right?
Get and the Alpines. Alpines. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Monrovia grows Alpine strawberries.
Alpines are good, but you know what they remind me of? As a child, the fake strawberries that were in cereals, that's what they remind me of. They're so super sweet.
Oh, that kind of dry.
And crinkly.
Yes.
And a little seedy.
Yeah.
My grandmother used to get a cereal that had dehydrated strawberries in it. Then I remember they were crunchy and really sweet, but they tasted like strawberries.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was an interesting one. If you want to take a look at, if you'd like to learn more and take a look at this list, we're gonna post a link for the video and also the list of the plants. And like I said, there's about five of them that you can get off the shelf here. I looked at our suppliers and that's about all we have sourced for them, but we'll give you the website where you can order them yourself online. And I actually have a bunch. I have all of these on order. They're going to be coming in and I'm going to split them with you guys.
Oh,
and
we'll fun.
See, but see what we can grow. Do. See yep. what we
the
can
competition
do
will begin.
All yeah. right. Well, thank you, folks, for joining us today on Food Talk.
and restaurant reviews.
And restaurant reviews. Yeah. And what you can grow in your garden that tastes really, really good.
Yeah. And you can follow us on the website, the Walter Anderson Nursery main page. If you'd like to drop us an email, please do at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com. And remember, that's A-N-D-E-R-S-E-N. And we would be happy to talk to you on the air.
I was going to say, and also next week, join us. We have Natalie Stout. She's from the American Rose Society. She's a consulting rosarian and a member of the San Diego Rose Society.
Yes, should be a very, very interesting show. You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We'll be back next week with another hour. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, independent and family-owned since 1928. For more information about plants, products, expert advice, news, classes, podcasts, and more, visit walteranderson.com.